Six vote no.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Murphy. Murphy. Representative Doty, would you like to move the division report?
Madam Chair, I move the division report.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3417 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Gilbert.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I just think this was a real simple bill that be easy to explain. Think of it as a veteran that needs to go over and in combat like Iraq or Afghanistan. Okay, thank you. Anyway, if they go over, they used to own a business, and so they had to dissolve their business and go over and serve. And so after they come back, they would like to start their business again, and we're waiving the reinstatement fee.
Any discussion? Any questions? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy. Murphy.
Good morning, Madam Chair members.
Representative Doty, would you like to move the division report?
Madam Chair, I move the committee report.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3762 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3762 creates a Veterans Health Care Advisory Committee. This is the result of the work of the Governor's Long-Term Care Commission over the summer and fall. And the Advisory Committee will advise the Department of Veterans Affairs on the future health care of veterans. And I would love your support.
Are there any questions? Comments? Hearing none, I renew the motion that House File 3762 pass with recommendation and be referred to the Committee of Finance. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Have a great morning.
Representative Junkie.
Come on.
Jeez.
That's the way things are going.
There's a bill.
Do we have that bill? Can I move it?
All right, 37 seconds.
There we go.
There it is.
I got it.
Representative Doty, would you move the adoption of the division report?
Madam Chair, I would move the adoption of the division report for House File 3762.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So the report is adopted. House File 3763 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, this was heard in Representative Conan's committee. It simply is the language to officially move the Veterans Home Board over to the Department of Veterans Affairs, a bunch of mainly technical changes and updating the statute. That's the bill.
Any questions? Comments? Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, if the repealer is just repealing the board, is that all?
Yes.
Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, I renew my notion that House File 3763 passed with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say
aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes. Representative Doty, would you like to move the division report?
Madam Chair, move the division report for on House File 3749.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The report is adopted. I move House File 3749 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Madam Chair, members, this is there was an announcement yesterday by the governor on a veteran cemetery up by Jay Cook State Park, and this is the enabling language for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Simply, that's what the bill does. It was heard in Representative Conan's committee. There is some fiscal cost out into the future for maintaining the cemetery, but there's no upfront cost from the state on it for constructing the cemetery or the building.
Any questions? Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, does this in any way change who's eligible for burial in veteran cemeteries?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, no.
Are there any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, I renew my notion that House File 3749 passed with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes.
None of them here.
Anybody get the light?
So much better. I mean, generally, I do. I think you're in this committee.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's why I want to ask that.
Representative Doty, would you move to adopt the division report?
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the division report for House File 3427.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3427 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Detmer.
Madam Chairman and members,
Did we move up on schedule here?
Yeah.
I apologize for stepping out, but I knew this was a fast committee, so I...
Yeah, good thing you were here.
Yeah.
We might have been done.
Madam Chairman and committee, I do have an oral amendment on page 3. Again, this is House File 3427.
Madam Chair, I don't have a bill.
We don't have a bill, Madam Chair.
It's an oral amendment.
This is Representative Denver. We need the bill.
You don't have the bill.
I don't have the next one. All I have is a piece of page 3. You only got one page there.
I have a CR1 on it.
Page 3. Okay. Yeah.
That's just the amendment. CR1 and that's
the amendment. No, we only have. We don't have either bill.
Well,
3672. We don't
have a one page.
You should have,
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to get it.
Pardon?
It's going to get it.
Okay. We could go on to the next bill.
We don't have that one.
We don't have that one either. Pardon? No.
So do you want
to... Madam Chairman, what do you want us to do here? You should have the bills in front of you before we go on. The next bill is House File 33660. Apparently you don't have that one either.
Madam Chair, while we're waiting for the two bills from Representative Detmer, we do have Representative Coonan here. We do have House File 3617.
Madam Chair, I'd be glad to pull out of the parking lot here and wait my turn then.
We'll table the bill until we get more information, and so we'll put House File 3427 on the table.
Okay, thank you.
Is that okay? Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
Representative Coonan.
Do we need Al to move the division report? Al will.
Representative Jody, would you move the division report?
Madam Chair, I move the division report on House File 3617.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3717 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Welcome, Representative Coonan. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. And this bill is basically it's a demonstration project that will take place at one or more of Minnesota's veterans' homes. And it's the type of demonstration that if it doesn't work, there's no cost to the department. With the interest of time, I think we'll go right to the witnesses, and then after that, if it's okay with the chair, we'll take questions at that point.
Thank you. state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Tom Spencer, President of Advanced Healing Systems. Just a couple of words of introduction here. You're going to see a few slides around you, and these are to help you understand the concept. And the concept is really easy, and the goal is really simple. So I'll try to make this very simple to understand. Advanced Healing Systems, working with Minnesota's nursing homes, has developed a cure for chronic ulcers. And that is chronic ulcers of all kinds: decubitus, diabetic, ischemic, venous. This is a wonderful, good news story. We're here today as a company because we partnered with the nursing homes in this state to develop this cure, and we represented a good demonstration project for the Healthcare Access Commission. So the background is, we got here because they said, you guys have a great plan, and it starts with a formulary. And the formulary is just a fancy word for a recipe. So what does the recipe do? The recipe provides, starting with, training of doctors and nurses in the use of our systems, the systems they themselves have helped develop, to cure this horrible problem. And just to give you an example of the dimension of the problem, CMS says that Minnesota's share of pressure ulcer costs is $217 million annually in Minnesota. So that's CMS's report in 2006. The second thing that we do as a formulary is we provide tools, both diagnostic, prevention, and treatment in the nursing home or in the long-term care setting. Now, this is very interesting because we start with diagnosis, and we put a technology in the nursing home that heretofore you could only get in the heart lab. So you could get it at Minneapolis Heart Clinic, you could get it at Mayo, but you couldn't get it in the nursing home, so we wound up misclassifying about 25 to 30% of all the wounds we see. So we go on to prevention, and we're using a technology that has been pioneered in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I have a son who is a veteran who is a survivor of three IED explosions in Iraq, and they've used one of the technologies we're using in our nursing homes to prevent, completely prevent, chronic infections. So this is a marvelous good news story. Finally, we introduce a new treatment technology which, in simple terms, causes the body to think it's 19 years old again. So we heal from the bottom up, bone, muscle, skin. It's wonderful. All right. Thirdly, we put in information systems which measure the outcome. So on a weekly basis, Commissioner Acevedo can look at a form that says, here's my wound volume in Laverne, Minnesota, and we're reducing it on a weekly basis. Here's my rate of closure, and we're closing our wounds across all wound categories. And then finally, as part of our recipe, we provide a guideline which allows nurses and doctors to use the new excellent tools we've placed in their hands and to match that with all of the training they've received in their nursing schools and their medical schools. That's what we do. It's pretty simple, and it ought to be very simple for the state to look at and say, gee, if it works, let's pay them. If it doesn't, let's don't. Now, I'm going to turn that over to a nurse consultant for our company, who is also a nurse who was the nurse as the director of nursing at the state's largest nursing home. And she's got a couple of cases to talk to you about.
Good morning, Chairman.
Yes, please state your name for the tape and go
ahead. I'm Kathy King, and I am a consultant with Advanced Healing and also a director of nursing. And I have two cases that I just would like to talk to you about. And the first one is on my left over here. And this is a 53-year-old gentleman who actually had a surgical amputation of his fifth toe. And that was in 2004. He has testified before several committees, one last week, and he's unable to be here today. But we began treating him with the technology that you see up there, which basically is something that happens twice a day for a half an hour. You push a button on that machine. There's this loop right here, lays over the wound for 30 minutes, twice a day. You can leave all your clothing on, any treatments that you have, casts, anything like that. After his surgeon, who wanted to amputate his leg below the knee, gave about a week to say, we're going to see if this works at all. Within a week, they saw that there was diminished swelling, pain, and it took from, you'll see on there, June 23rd, 2004 to 9/12/2004 before the toe was actually totally healed. And today he's returned to his usual work and activity. The second case is actually the case of an 87-year-old woman who was admitted to my facility. She lives and did at that time live in an assisted living, had company, was making a pot roast. Once you get the pot roast out of the oven, when she backed up, she fell backwards and the pot roast and the pan ended up in on her lap or on her leg. She was at Hennepin County in the burn center for a period of time. Came to my facility. We implemented this machine and also the technology that Tom was talking about, the silver solution that's used in Afghanistan and Iraq, and use that to eradicate the infection in her leg. And within 69 days, the bottom picture is the result. She's totally healed, went home where she lives today.
Go ahead and state your name for the tape and go ahead and tell us what you...
Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Mary Hafner. I'm Director of Quality Assurance for Elam Care Incorporated. Our corporate office is out of Eden Prairie, and we service veterans and elderly in 9 nursing homes and 7 assisted living facilities in 3 states. A year ago, January through July, we implemented this whole formulary, which involves that Tom was mentioning, in one of our facilities as a trial to see if this is something that, if it's as good as it says it is, to see if we could actually save money with wounds in our facilities. We were very successful. We were able to heal wounds that residents have had for 7 years, as long as I've known them since I've been with the corporation. Wounds that no one ever thought that they would be able to heal. They were stasis wounds resulting from peripheral vascular disease, stage 3 and 4 pressure ulcers, and we saw such remarkable improvement and healing of these wounds that our corporation has decided to implement this technology in all of our facilities, nursing home facilities, as well as assisted living. Recently, we had a situation in one of our facilities in Watertown that a wound specialist had referred to Watertown and was set to going to be up for an amputation. And they were able to heal the wound and prevent the amputation. That wound specialist now is referring all of his wounds to our Watertown facility. And one of the family members asked, can't you do an outpatient? So we can really see that as a provider, we could be able to provide for the community as well wound healing, wound prevention and wound healing. Most recently, I had surgery on my left foot January 18th and developed a wound infection. My physician put me in the hospital and it wanted a wound back on, IV antibiotics, and the wound was not healing. So I begged him, I told him, we've tried this new formulary in our facilities. Could I please try it on myself? And so he said, well, if it works in your facilities. He had not heard of this. This technology is so new that he was not aware of it. He agreed to write the order, and so I contacted Advanced Healing, And he, 3.5 weeks ago today, he was ready to amputate my toe. My toe now is healing and has circulation, and so I'm going to be able to keep my toe. So I'm personally, not only as a provider to care for the elderly, and I'm also a veteran of the U.S. Air Force Nurse Corps during the Vietnam War, saw many wounds, and I can't tell you how wonderful this type of technology would have been back then. And now we can see the results of it in our care centers as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you bring samples of the stuff that makes your body think it's 19 again? I'd like to know. Are there any other questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Taking a look at the two examples up there, if this device was not used, about how long would it have taken the natural occurrence to get them back to the state?
Our experience has been, and I've used this technology since 2004, twice as long. And my experience has been what happens when you do traditional wound healing. What happens is that the wound heals the top first, and it doesn't heal from the bottom up. And so what happens a lot of times, especially with frail human beings, is that it'll heal, but then it'll break open again. And what my experience has been in the last 4 years is that once you heal with this technology, the skin, the tensile strength of the skin is that much stronger, it doesn't break open again.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I think I'm 19 every Sunday night when I play basketball, and I'm reminded the next morning that I'm not. But Representative Coonan, what is the appropriation from the general fund on this? What will it be?
Members of the committee, my name is David Coons. I am doing the lobbying for advanced healing systems on this. When we drafted the legislation, we had it so that we hope we have it in form that the commissioner can select from 1 to 5 sites, roll the program out as he feels he has the capabilities and is ready to do it. And the cost is runs about $25,000 per location.
Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
I have a couple of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the process, as far as healing, would this take care of even bed sores and those types of things?
Yes. It's actually, that is really the type of wound that when I first tried this, that we, so it's those wounds that are over, bony areas where people are in bed and things like that, but that is the primary place where we heal these wounds.
Representative Smith.
May I continue with questions? Sure. Is this FDA approved, and is it a patented technology, and is it spread nationwide already?
I can answer that, Dave Coons, Mr. Chair, Representative. This is being rolled out across the United States in veterans' homes, for the federal veterans' homes. They're doing their program in the initial stages, and it's been for the last 2 to 3 years, and they're doing it at outpatient clinics, and they're having great success where the device, this device can be sent home with the patient, and they do the treatment at home. So yes, and it is FDA approved.
Thank you.
I guess I have a quick question. Can you tell us a little bit what it does that accomplishes what it does? I mean, there's a lot of snake oil products out there right now. Does it have voodoo dust in it, or what does it have that makes this thing work? How does it actually help do what it does?
If you think of X-rays and radio waves are long, cool waves. and then it keeps getting shorter and shorter and shorter until you get the CT scans and those things, and these are high energy and have heat in them. So this part of the spectrum. Where we're at is over in the radio wave area, FM, AM. Those are long, cool waves. And at a certain frequency and at a certain pulse, it will stimulate the natural healing process in the cell at the cellular level. And so it's a radio wave technology that does it. And once that starts, the normal healing process of the first thing we need to do is get fibroblasts coming to the wound location, and that's where what happens first. Then it reduces pain and swelling in the area, and then it starts that natural process, and then it draws over 990 different proteins that are needed in the cell to heal the cell properly. And so it starts that whole process and keeps it going. Very exciting. This was, I will say one thing, this was used previously in bone stem. Where we had breaks in bones that were sheared straight across and you had trouble getting them to mend and stay together, and it was first perfected there. But now we're using it in rehabilitating cells, tissue, and so on.
Representative Drukowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of our areas of science, we put together experimentation regimes in order to evaluate the efficacy or sort out different variables that might affect different types of outcomes. Can you tell us about the regime that you have used and any sort of replications or trials that have been conducted with this technology?
Oh, yes. Tom, you want to come and speak to that?
Representative Tom Spencer, yes, there have been double-blind, placebo-controlled, multi-centered studies with PEMF, which is what this technology is. I think the important part here is that it isn't just one technology that's going to get the job done. In fact, I would say that any new technology today that comes out of any medical science think tank is probably irrelevant if providers who need the training to understand why the science works don't get that training. And in fact, in the era of managed care, that's the problem that the whole system that we've created has caused, which is Kathy's an excellent nurse. We know that. We work with her. We've seen her do her thing in nursing homes. And what she needs is she needs to be empowered at the bedside to do the best diagnosis, prevention, and treatment. So in effect, this box or anything we could bring up here is useless unless we start with provider training. One more thought. When Kathy needs to do her work, she also needs to educate the hospital that's admitting those wounds to the nursing home. Because at HDMC, for example, at the Benedictine home in Minneapolis, every other order that comes in for wound care is somebody else's recipe. Some vascular surgeon or some hospitalist sends an order over that looks nothing like the last one, sometimes on the same patient. So what our nursing homes and what our long-term care and our continuum of care needs is they need some consistency and they need some reliability on the systems that will get it done, hence the formulary, and hence the reason we're here. This isn't just isolated to a wound in a box. This is a system-wide, multidisciplinary approach. We've got it. We've perfected it. We actually can demonstrate it now with data by age, by sex, by primary diagnosis, by length, depth, width, reduction on a weekly basis. It's really a wonderful thing that your nursing homes in Minnesota have done. And the rest of the world is going to find out about what they've done, and we're going to solve a problem.
Madam Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up with what you had just said, do we have copies of the research that the research summaries that have been put together? The level of replication that has been put together, what type of demographics have been included in those types of things?
Yes, we do, and we'll certainly make a copy available to your representatives. The other point is, and this is another point that really goes to the point that we try to make in the healthcare system today, those who are frontline providers in primary care are saying a single fact that everybody needs to recognize. It's already FDA approved as safe. So if a nurse says, here are my clinical outcomes data, and we all agree that it's healed, really, do we need any more studies?
Sir, I would submit that yes, we do. We need to... I'm sorry. Sorry, Madam Chair.
Sure.
We need to know the reason that the healing is occurring.
Sure.
And that's why we get back to science in sorting out variables. There's all kinds of variables. If I... using the toe metaphor, if I stub my toe today, and if I stub both toes, one on each foot today, and I wash one with detergent and leave the other one alone, I could have the same outcome.
You could. It's interesting to say that, though, Representative, because at a nursing home in Watertown that you just heard, the family was facing amputation, and now they're no longer facing it. So certainly, if you're a patient being treated by the system, they not only want studies, they want results. And what we're trying to do is put the power back at the provider level, not at a committee level, not at a decision-making that's outside of the patient-doctor relationship, but right where the doctor meets the patient and the nurse delivers the care. That's what we're trying to do. If we can do that, we've succeeded, we think. And we'll look at our outcomes data and also continue the study.
Madam Chair, thank you. So what I'm hearing is there have been studies done, but not on larger populations. Is that correct?
Actually, studies have been done on large populations as well. So we'll provide that information to you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I heard you say that this is being used nationwide. Have you approached any other states to help fund this project, or have you had any interest from like universities or hospitals or any private investors as well?
Actually, all over the country. It's an amazing thing. According to CMS's report in 2006, 323,000 pressure ulcers were treated in long-term care environments for a total cost of about $13 billion. So there's tremendous excitement, but I would stress one more point, and that's the point that's the Minnesota experiment. They're focused on a box, and so are investors, and so are HMOs. What can we do that we can code, that we can put into a healthcare environment that's going to solve our problem?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that that's only part of the solution. Provider education, outcomes, data systems, and guidelines that help the whole community understand the solution are also necessary in order to make this really work. Now, we have 54 nursing homes in the state of Minnesota that has decided that this is the best standard of care. We now have nursing homes in Iowa, Illinois, and Milwaukee, and today we can look at a cubitus ulcer on a 78-year-old female in Des Moines and compare it with one in Hibbing,
mm-hmm,
to see the healing rate comparatively. This is an outstanding result, and it was started by Minnesota's nursing homes, doctors, and nurses. This is remarkable. Yes.
So, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, are there other states that are funding the study?
No, we don't know of any yet.
Okay.
We expect that there will be increased interest in funding for nursing homes.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and testifier. So, how much will it cost?
Well, how much does treatment cost? Let me put it in the simplest terms for you. For all of the systems, about $1.15 per VA resident per day. So if we paid for prevention and not just treatment, it'd be about $1.15 per veteran per day.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
But if Representative Faust wanted to buy one of those, what would it cost him?
About $25,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are there any institutions that have accredited this technology? Has it been, endorsed by Mayo Clinic, American Medical Association, organizations like that? I understand the safety and FDA has approved it. Have any health organizations accredited and promoted it as a leading technology?
Actually, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid have given it an E-code, EO769, which is a reimbursement code. So, yeah, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid is a pretty big institution, and they've decided that it's worth paying for. So, yeah, it's making progress that way. And it is also accredited by the National Pressure Ulcer Advisory Council and is now being accredited by the American Medical Directors Association. So, great progress is being made. Again, through leadership and through hard work of providers who really care about their patients.
Representative,
Madam Chair, thank you. I guess this would be for Representative Coonan. How many companies offer this technology? And if this bill were to become law, would there be competitive bidding for this for this application?
Three.
I can answer that.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead. Three companies actually manufacture the PEMF device. There are no companies that offer a formulary other than Advanced Healing Systems. Interestingly enough, we would love for Allina and Health Partners to offer a formulary like they do for drug benefits in wound care, because we think that that's going to get the best bang for the buck through provider training, technologies, outcomes measurement, and guidelines. Now, that's what they were commissioned to do, to improve provider communication, collaboration, and compliance. So, if they'd like, we'll give them the tools and they can bid on the project. We'd love to have them bid. It would make my job much, much easier. But there are three manufacturers of the box for treatment that can bid on this, and I would hope they would.
Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, I guess, is Representative Kowski was asking about some information on previous studies and that type of thing. How soon can we get that information to us?
Actually, I think we have some we can hand out to you today.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Great.
Are there any other questions or discussion? If not, hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 3717 pass with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Finance. 3617 pass with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say yes.
Madam Chair? Well, I'm sorry. Will this go to Health and Human Services? Okay.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer. Representative Doty, would you move adoption of the division report?
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Thank you. Representative Bowes.
Madam Chair, I move that we take House File 3427 off the table and take a look at it.
Thank All you. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion there.
Madam Chairman and committee members, here we go again. Okay. I assume everybody has a copy of the House File 3427. Madam Chairman, I do have a oral amendment on page 3, line 9, delete was deployed or discharged after. Again, page 3, line 9, delete was deployed or discharged after. On page 3, line 10, page 3, line 10, delete September 11th, 2001. And basically what this oral amendment will do, it will put it in the same version as the Senate. Again, I'll repeat the amendment. Page 3, line 9, delete was deployed or discharged after. Page 3, line 10, delete September 11th, 2001. And again, it puts it in the same version as the Senate.
Senator Paul?
Madam Chair, I move that oral amendment.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair and committee members, today I have testifying with me is Colonel Allness with the Minnesota National Guard and also Mr. Lee Nelson with the DEED. Committee, Madam Chairman, House File 3427, this bill establishes an interest-free loan program for businesses that suffered severe economic losses as a result of the essential employee of the business being called to active duty. Established in this bill is a revolving loan account, loans granted up to $20,000 per business. Again, this is a revolving loan account. Monies paid on the principal of the account are deposited back in the revolving loan account. Interest earned on the money is accrued in the account to the account, and the cost established and administration of this program may be funded from this account. The bill also expands the dislocated worker program to include veterans who were honorably discharged, serving, and have earned less than what they should be getting for their qualifications, including their skills that they developed while serving on military duty. Additionally, this bill exempts employers from calculating unemployment payments in their tax liabilities for laying off temporary employees that were filling the employees while the normal employees were serving on active duty. I'll open for any questions.
Are there any questions or discussions? Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You remember the discussion that we had on the House floor about whether or not individuals that served in the National Guard would qualify as well, depending on how the verbiage was written in the bill. Is that a concern here, or do we have them covered as well to be eligible?
Yeah, they're all covered. And then, Colonel, would you like to address that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Colonel Eric Allens, Department of Military Affairs. Yes, when this language was crafted, we resolved that. And I think the language you're talking about on the floor was regarding the tax treatment of National Guard people versus the reserve. And that was written before we corrected the language that defined the veteran, defined the language on what military service was. Since we made that correction and refined the language, that should prevent that kind of mistake from happening in the future, and in fact resolve it for this case.
Representative Bowes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a follow-up on that. We, if I'm not mistaken, we defined a veteran as somebody that served 180 consecutive days of active duty. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of the National Guard units came home just short of that. Will they still qualify under this or not?
Madam Chair, Representative. You're right. Currently, Veterans Affairs, their definition of a veteran says cumulative of 180 days. And just as we repaired the military definition several years ago, there's been discussions about how can we address the definition for veterans. It's a little late in the session for us to start addressing that in a holistic manner, but there's ongoing discussions between Veterans Affairs and through us, through our legal department, to look at it in a similar manner and provide that treatment. There is changes that it would not have to be cumulative, but at this time that is the case. Most Army National Guard, we deploy an Army Reservist, they deploy for at least a year at a time during the current way that we deploy. It's the Air Guard and Air Reserve who typically deploy for shorter periods. And what we're looking for is that we could look at a cumulative rather than a consecutive time period. And that's something we'll work on over time to help them out.
Okay.
I have another question.
Representative Faust.
My question is on the qualifications for the loan. When I go to a bank, they make sure that, you know, that I have some assets or something before they give me money. Is there anything in here as far as that goes, or they can be in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars and still get the $20,000 loan?
Madam Chair, first members of the committee, let me introduce myself. I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program, and I do other work for Deed. Madam Chair, Representative Faust, the bill does provide for expedited rulemaking in which that would be addressed. That's one of the questions. So there are a lot of open questions. Could you use this loan to pay back taxes? I mean, there have been a lot of discussion how it will be framed, but the intent is to do that through rulemaking.
Okay.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe Representative Edmonds, if you have actually two questions. I'm looking online, 2.12. I understand this to be an interest-free loan. And if we look at actually 2.11, all repayments and loans made under this section, including principal and interest, with the words and interest be inapplicable, seeing this is an interest-free loan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And maybe it's for Mr. Nelson. I apologize.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, I believe we'd be open to striking the words and interest.
Well, then I suppose leave that to Representative Detmer, or I would be happy to make that oral amendment if you'd like, Mr. Representative Detmer.
Madam Chairman and Committee, I would like to make this oral amendment. Thank you.
Well, since I'm on the committee, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that on line 2.12, we strike the comma and the words including principal and interest and the second comma. That'd be on line 2.2, Mr. Cleary. 2.12, excuse me.
Discussion of the amendment. Would you like to repeat it, Mr. Cleary?
I'm sorry, say again, Madam Chair.
Would you like to read it?
Yes, Madam Chair. As I understood it, the second sentence. The one beginning on line 2.11 would read, all repayments of loans made under this section must be deposited in, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
And then, Madam Chair, if I might, Representative Debbie, you have a CR1 amendment that I believe that you'd like to add to the bill. The committee report, so do we need to move it? Okay, then we're fine.
Madam Chairman, Representative Morrow, thank you for that quick eye there. Thank you.
Are there any other questions or discussions? If not, I renew my motion that House File 3427, as amended, pass with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passed.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Committee. Thank you.
You want to just do yours next, too? Representative Doty, would you move the adoption of the division report?
Madam Chair, I move the adoption of the division report on House File 3660.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3660 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chairman, Committee. House File 3660, basically, simply, the bill makes it illegal to fire or punish an employee for having a spouse or other family member serving in the armed forces. Furthermore, this bill makes it illegal to punish or fire an employee for attending military events associated with the family member's service. And the bill permits an affected employee to take action against an employer who violates the above legislation. And violation of this law is a gross misdemeanor. And I would like Colonel Allness to address the bill.
Madam Chair, members, Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. Several years ago, we applied the federal protections to the service members in state law, and we found that was very helpful in helping service members work with employers to ensure that they weren't disadvantaged just because they're military service. Since that time, we've received zero complaints from employers that this caused an issue. Over about the last year, especially with the 1st Brigade Combat Team deployed, one of the largest constituent issues that we received from members of the legislature here from Congress is some of the issues arising from the spouses trying to get time off to attend some critical military training so that when the service member returns from overseas that they could reintegrate and be successful. And so this is an effort to address that holistically with the employer and the service member, providing a reasonable accommodation for both so that those family members can attend this important training and sustain their membership within with their employer.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering, isn't it, first I wonder, are there actually people who fire people because their spouse is in the military? I mean, do they actually say that? Are there currently laws dealing with wrongful termination of an employee's spouse? And what I'm getting at is, they are actually doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative, unfortunately, yes, they are. Many employers will find other reasons, too, but there are cases where this comes in. And really what this does is help keep honest people honest and really try to convey that if there is an issue, as our Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, the Ombudsman, voluntary employees of the Department of Labor go out and work with employers, it gives them a little more oomph to help resolve the issue to the benefit of the service member and their family member. Now, also, we understand, too, that there's some abuse from family members on this. That's why we talk about they have to make reasonable notice to the employer and so forth. And we'll work with them. We don't just accept carte blanche the family member's assertion, but we go back and follow up with folks to make sure that it's due diligence is done on both sides.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Emmer, thank you for this bill. I asked this question. I know this could open up a Pandora's box of people, but I do wonder about fiancés, and I know that maybe that's opening up beyond where you want to go, but did you at least consider the inclusion of fiancé within this provision?
Madam Chairman and Representative Moore, that has not been part of the bill. It's just immediate family members. Just to add on to what the Colonel said here was, I know when I was mobilized for the 20 months, my unit was down in Fort Gordon, Georgia, and my family's up here. So my family, we were fortunate where my wife had her own business and so forth. She could come and visit but when I was deployed overseas, that was a different story. But I think the way the military is now, a lot of soldiers, they are taken up by different units from around the country, so that they might not be just mobilized here in Minnesota, they might be ended up in different states. So when we return from overseas, we usually go back to the location that we're mobilized at, and it won't necessarily be Minnesota, and many times it's out of state, so it's nice to have that flexibility where immediate family members can come and be there when we return.
Representative Kostrowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Detmer and Colonel Olmos, thank you both. Just wondering if the criminal penalty here is a little bit intense. You know, with our jail situation and so forth, and have you thought about that? Maybe scaling it back to just a misdemeanor, or obviously you've got the tort side included in the bill.
Madam Chairman and Representative, it's consistent with federal law, so we're just being consistent there. And I know that the employer support of the Guard Reserve, we do a lot to recognize our employers. I know many times I've had my superintendent when I was teaching or a building principal come down into my unit. My unit was here in Minnesota, and we recognized them and gave them awards and so forth for their support. I think we're doing more and more in the military to support our businesses and our employers to give them recognition for their support. So I think we're just following the federal guidelines here.
Any other questions? I have a question. I've read several stories about women who have children, and then they go to Iraq, and they have custody, and while they're gone, they take away their custody for the other parent. Have you ever heard of that, or have you ever thought about doing something like that?
Madam Chairman, why don't you address that, Colonel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are some issues where custodial issues are considered by the court during the absence of a military member for both a woman and for male service members, and there is legislation currently being considered by the state on that, and I guess I've deferred to that time, but there are issues about that, and there's some concern from military members. Could there just be a stay on that for any permanent decisions until the service member returns? And that's really what I think most military people's concern is, that they would be disadvantaged just because of their deployment or being on a deployment. Understand there might be some temporary changes to custodial issues, but the big thing is not to make it permanent during the time of their absence.
All those in favor?
Wait a minute. What's the motion?
The motion? Hearing none. That piece?
No. Where's it going?
Public safety. Okay. Any other questions?
So, Madam Chair, just to confirm, this bill is going to public safety, which will address the concerns Representative Kowalski had. We're not the public safety committee. They're the ones that decide on gross misdemeanor and tort activities, everything else. So. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? If not, I renew my motion that House File 3660 pass this recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Bill passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Committee.
Representative Tinglestead. Representative Jody moves the adoption of the season report. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3686 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I've served on the Veterans Affairs Committee for the past 4 years, and it has sort of amazed me the number of bills that have come through to bring our laws up to date for the time of deployment of our National Guard. You know, those 2,600 troops that were gone last year was the largest deployment since World War II. So we're seeing a lot of issues that relate to that and trying to change our laws, update our laws here to make it so that those National Guard members, reserve members, can do the service to their country. So my bill today is House File 3686, and it provides a stay of proceedings for businesses of Minnesota residents who are National Guard or military service members and have been mobilized into any type of active military service for 60 days or more. It exempts them from civil court proceedings, so it delays it, but they're not off the hook. And with this bill, then, it helps provide opportunities for reservist-owned businesses to remain viable and help sustain our armed forces and their families. And I think there's a sheet that just came around that gives more details on the bill. So, Madam Chair and members, today I have with me Colonel Kerr, who can give you more details about the bill, and then we'll stand for questions.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr, and I'm with the Department of Military Affairs. As Colonel Allness testified previously, we thought we had done due diligence in moving forward with state legislation to mirror federal legislation, but as is often the case, we found that we did not cover all the bases through bitter experience. And though these protections are provided to service members in their own regard, we found that there was a gap in that a wholly owned business of a service member was not given the same protection that the service member himself was. The situation that brought this to light was one of our soldiers who owned a contracting business. He and his wife owned the contracting business. I had to back out of some of his contracts that he had laid out to do some construction work, and then because he was deployed. And he was sued. Actually, he wasn't, but his business was sued, and he has had great difficulty in delaying that action and dealing with that action while he's deployed in Iraq. And this would actually extend those protections to the wholly owned business. As Representative Finkelstead said, it does not relieve them of any responsibility, merely delays the proceeding long enough so that the service member can return from deployment and deal with the issue in court.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Discussion? If not, I move House File 3686 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Doty, would you like to adopt the division news report?
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the report on House File 3672.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The report is adopted. I move House File 3662 with recommendation to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Before I go any further, this needs to go to Government Operations? Okay.
All of the days. Any definition of days of all
time. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill you have before you is kind of the result of a previous bill I think you've already heard in this committee, which was the Vietnam War Veterans Day. Representative Hosh Larry has that provision, and as I was going through the Veterans Committee, I was approached by one of our veterans who is not unsympathetic with the veterans, the Vietnam veterans bill, but brought to my attention and something that I had forgotten about, which is the forgotten war, Korea. And often we, you know, we honor our veterans for World War II and for the Vietnam War, and we forget the conflict that took place shortly after World War II, in which many of our warriors put their lives on the line and many did not return. And so this, just as a little background, the federal government had recognized July 27th as Korean War Armistice Day, but that provision ran out in 2003, so there on the federal books there is no longer a Memorial Day for that. And we felt that it was appropriate that as we honor our Vietnam War veterans, that we also ensure that we do not forget the veterans who served and put their lives on the line for the Korean War veterans. So the bill that you have before you is that provision. Now, what we did do in this one, because there was some concern, there was some discussion that we had on, we do have a Veterans Day, and it would be a little bit marginalizing if we continue to pull apart the veterans, Vietnam veterans, the World War II veterans, the Korean War veterans, the Gulf War veterans, and continue to kind of isolate it into different conflicts, rather to recognize the day like we currently do with Victory Over Japan Day, Victory Over Europe Day, and then we have another Memorial Day that is set aside just for veterans, for serving veterans. So this one has been modified, this particular bill has been modified to reflect that. It's the Korean War Armistice Day, which was July 27th, 53, thank you. I don't think that was correct. Okay. And so it's a pretty straightforward bill, and I would stand for any questions, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions, comments, discussion? If not, hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 3672 pass with recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Gardner.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Representative Fowles.
Madam Chair, I move House File 3789 to General Register.
Welcome, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a delete all amendment that we'll keep this coordinated with Senator Roebling's bill in the Senate. The DE-1 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the delete all amendment DE-1.
Discussion to the amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
You're dumb. I voted.
Very good.
The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It pays to keep plugging Representative Rudolph, but he always votes for my motion in other committees. Madam Chair, to the bill, as you know, several years ago, the state did ban the sale of phosphorus-laden fertilizer with several exceptions, and that law has actually gone quite well. The amount of phosphorus being used has actually gone down. This is for lawns. I don't know if this handout was there, but there's actually a report from the Department of Ag reporting on the effectiveness of the law. However, because of the exceptions, there are still pallets of
phosphorus fertilizer still available in retailers, which are certainly available to use for the four purposes for which they're exceptions. But a lot of consumers are buying the phosphorus fertilizer without realizing that it, they can't use it on their lawn, for example, unless the exceptions are there. So what this bill does is really asks that the sign similar to this be posted at the point of sale, just to let people know what the statute is and what the exceptions are, so that it's perfectly clear. And it also repeals the requirement for a report, which has already been completed. So we're just completing the, or cleaning up the statute. And I do have someone from the Department of Ag here to answer questions, but I know you have other things to do, so I won't beat you to death with 20 minutes of testimony. But I'd be happy to answer questions.
Representative Jonesy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, a couple of questions. Where did this come from, and why is it here?
Actually, it was the Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, Senator Roebling, took the initiative on this and asked for a House author. Those of us who are in the suburbs who have lots of people with big lawns and automated sprinklers and things that have stuff ending up into our storm sewers and our local urban lakes, are concerned about water quality, and we just want to make sure that consumers actually know what the law says so that they don't go, I should, or we do want them to say, let's use the phosphorus alternative, which is readily available, instead of the thing that's off the pallet at the hardware store.
So, Madam Chair, this didn't come from the retailers or the wholesalers or anyone like that. It's something that's a legislative initiative only?
Madam Chair, Representative Junker, that's my understanding, although if anyone cares to clarify that, they certainly can. It's not a an environmental advocacy group plot or anything.
And Madam Chair, to the department, can I apply phosphorus fertilizer on my garden?
For the record, my name is Dan Stoddard. I'm a manager of the environmental section in the pesticide and fertilizer division at the Department of Ag. And the answer is yes, this law only applies to lawns.
And Madam Chair, so my first point would be a little ambiguous here, because you're only referring to lawn. And nowhere in here do you say it's legal or applicable to apply it on flower beds, gardens, and other things. And that's mainly, I would say, where people are buying and applying that phosphorus for, is to start seeds in a garden or a... And it doesn't really state it here, so I think, number one, that's a little confusing in the directions. Number two, my question is, what's your definition of a wholesaler?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I may have to seek counsel on where the definition of wholesaler ends up.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I don't believe the term wholesaler is defined in Chapter 18C, but I will grab the statute book right now and check.
And Madam Chair and Representative Gardner, I understand the bill. I guess I just have some concerns. I'm not necessarily against it, but I'm not necessarily for it either. In our neck of the woods, you talked about the big suburban lawns, but in our neck of the woods, a wholesaler would probably be the local co-op that bags, brown bags of fertilizer, and either sells them at their own store or gas station, or provides them to a retailer in town. And, you know, if it's Scott's or some large, you know, lawn fertilizer company, I don't necessarily have a problem with this, although I'm surprised they're not here to testify, frankly, and get their opinion on this. But you know, I'm not sure number one that they would follow this out there, and number two, I don't know that it's necessarily appropriate. I go back in history to this. Frankly, I don't think we should have. I don't think we should have had this law in western Minnesota. When you get west of Highway 71, there is a need for phosphorus. And so I didn't agree with the law to begin with, and now we're putting some burdens on our wholesalers, which basically will be farm co-ops out there in our area. So I just have some questions on it. It's the first time I've seen it, and I apologize for not talking to you sooner, but I'm a little concerned on a number of fronts, which I think you understand here now. But so have you heard from any of the wholesale people, whoever they are,
on this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I have not, and neither has Senator Roebling. Although I will say we are amenable to finding solutions on this too, Representative Junkie.
Representative Saul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question has to do with that we're not changing the law at all on whether they can use phosphorus or not. And so I just wanted to clarify that. But second of all, I wanted to find out, is there anything on the bags, on the bagging, on the labels, on the bags that states this law, as well as putting the sign out in front of the retail display?
Madam Chair, Representative Faust, you're correct. We're not actually changing the law. All it would require is a signage, which informs people what the law is. I don't have a little handy-dandy stand here for you, but your question was whether the bags that actually have it printed. I've worked on some labeling issues and on other issues not related to this bill, and for stuff that is sold across state lines, it gets a little dicey if you have to print this entire part on a bag, and as you know, space on a bag is sort of precious. Aluminum cans, cereal boxes, they have information about recyclability, and it changes from state to state. So I think that would be a tough go to actually print that on the bag just because of the interstate sale issue. You don't really know where your pallets are going, you know.
Mm-hmm. Representative Saul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that I agree with Representative Junkie that there are areas of the state where we actually, you know, phosphorus is needed for lawns. And I think that it's kind of, you know, soil tests are relatively expensive. I mean, we're talking, at least $30, probably $40 or $50 just for the lab fees on doing that. And I don't think many people are going to pay to have that done just so they can apply phosphorus on their fertilizer. And yet the dealers would know whether they need it in their area or not. The area where I'm from, there's plenty of phosphorus in the soils. But when the soils are cold, the phosphorus isn't being released early in the spring when it's real cold. But there are other parts of the state where there isn't the phosphorus in the soils, and so I think that I'd like to see something on here that maybe limits it just to the metro area or something like that, or in larger cities or something along that line. Because I don't think it makes sense in certain areas of rural Minnesota that we worry about this. Quite frankly, I think there's probably a lot of people out there who, you know, whatever they've got left over from planting is what they put on their lawn. And if that has phosphorus, then that's what they use. And so I'm not sure that, you know, I guess I'd like to see some of those changes on this bill.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner and Mr.
Stuttered,
thank you. As others have iterated, I too find the law itself to be very problematic. I live in rural Minnesota, and like Representative Junkie, as we go around to different co-ops, a lot of times the wholesaler is also the retailer. And so you're gonna have the question there is obviously they're going to have to pay to put their own sign up, but that raises the question: who is going to pay for these signs?
Madam Chair, Representative Duskowski, it actually is planned to be something that could be downloadable, so you could have just a PDF file and print it out and literally slap it on the window glass that goes behind the pallet.
Okay. I just want to share some of my concerns with the current law, and then obviously we've got a bill here to attach another piece there that says the retailer has to put a sign up, iterating to consumers what the current law is. The current law says that phosphorus fertilizer can be applied to lawns that are either being established by seed or by sod. Now, I guess I would have a question maybe for the department. In current law, if somebody is doing some patch seeding on their lawn, what's the interpretation of that? If I've got a 4-foot patch in my lawn that I'm reseeding because of mold growth on the lawn, is there a limitation on how much phosphorus fertilizer I can get, or Who makes that call?
Madam Chair, Representative Topke, if you're reseeding a lawn or parts of a lawn, then you can use phosphorus. And the decision is basically going to be yours. There's no one who oversees the law. It's a point of sale information kind of program.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up question, if I may, Madam Chair.
Representative Dostkowski.
I guess I'm curious as to why we are repealing the research piece with the U of M Extension Service. As I think we all know, there are varying contributors to phosphorus in the runoff that runs into the storm sewer system. Leaves, tree debris, grass clippings all contain high levels of phosphorus that can leach into and become part of that stream. I'd be curious to know what contributions those different elements may have to that.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe the repeal is for a report on the research, not the actual research. I don't think it was ever funding for research provided. And the report was completed last year. And in the report, which is available on the website, and I think a copy was handed out, we concluded that more research is needed. But right now there are research projects going on. There's one in particular at the University of Minnesota by Dr. Carl Rosen. And he's finding that, in fact, phosphorus runoff is a concern, but the most important thing is turf health and making sure that your lawn is properly fertilized.
And Madam Chair, Representative Dostkowski, the repealer just applies to the report, which has now been completed. So just trying to clean up the statute book of something that's already been done that it has a time certain on it. So.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just take a quick comment. I'm looking at on page 4, I believe, of the document that is produced by the Department of Agriculture. I share Representative Junkie's concerns. As I read, it's about 5 lines down. It says, fertilizers containing phosphorus cannot be used on lawns and turf in Minnesota unless, and then has the 4 reasons. I note that that language is a little different than the language at lines 110, 111. And I'm not asking a question, Representative Garner, but I'm suggesting that I actually found the language on the Department of Agriculture a little clearer, limiting its application to lawns and turf.
I beg your pardon, Representative Morrow. I can't see where in the report you're
looking. I'm on the back page of this 4-page document.
Oh, that part. Okay.
And I just offer that comment. I'm not asking a question.
Representative
Erdahl. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, just one question from over on this side of the table. Is there any reason why a wholesaler and not just have the retailer do it directly?
Representative Gardner.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, the committee process is really good for helping sort out these issues. I don't think we're going to screw up the process if you just focus on retailers, because that's where the point of sale is. But Mr. Stoddard probably can give you a little more background on that.
Madam Chair, Representative, one of the things that we found when we did our report last year is that there's a need for point of sale information, because a lot of what we're talking about is the big box stores where they have people who do a lot of different things, and they may not be very knowledgeable about the products that they're selling. Most of the wholesalers, they specialize in fertilizer. They know what they're doing. In fact, I think they're responding very favorably to this law. They do have educational programs. I think it's going pretty well. But our thought here is that they're the ones who would be best equipped to provide some information to retailers. Retailers can, if they want, for example, there's some retailers who are going to be very concerned about the message that they send, and so the bill was amended to allow retailers to do their own sign if they wanted, but for some of the companies that aren't really that interested in it, it makes it easier for them to get some information.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. I think part of the discussion went a little more far afield on the merits of phosphorus and whatever, but Representative Gardner, specifically what you're trying to do is to make sure that people know what the law is so they comply with it. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Verdal, that's correct. Just as you might have a city park where you want people to know that dogs must be on a leash, let them know about what's already on the books. That's the kind of same deal, just putting up the sign that says what the current law is. My purpose is not to crack open the existing law, because I'm sure that's been gone over many times in the past years when the original law went through. So the answer is yes, I'm sorry.
Representative Falls.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that kind of addresses my next comment, is that my problems really are with the existing law and not what you're trying to do to it. The signs, like you say, you can have a PDF, you can just print it out on a regular piece of paper and stick it up, so I don't think that's a big problem for anybody. I do have to ask, though, what is the penalty if somebody doesn't do this, because I know a lot of people in that industry, they're in fertilizer plants, they're just going to say, you know, I'm not going to bother, you know, waste my time doing that when I've got, you know, 800 tons of fertilizer to deliver today. So what is the penalty if somebody does not comply with this?
Madam Chair, President Stoddard has got the answer for you there.
Madam Chair, Representative, this the whole bill has been introduced as an opportunity to educate with local level enforcement, and as part of our study, we asked local units of government if there has been any enforcement. To our knowledge, there has not been any.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been some talk about phosphorus runoff and leaching. I thought that phosphorus actually binds to the soil, so you couldn't have runoff or leaching, that you'd actually have to have soil movement. I thought that was the understanding, or grass clippings or something like that. So I just wanted to bring that up. Also, you take a look at the handout that you sent around. In 2003, 56% of the lawn fertilizer that was sold was with phosphorus. Today it's only 18% or less. I think the law that we have is working, and therefore I don't see any additional need for additional legislation. My biggest concern is this will become a vehicle for something else, to where we can have additional anti-agriculture legislation coming forth on the House floor. That's what's making me nervous, and that's why I think we should vote against it.
Representative Junkie.
Madam Chair, I'd offer the following amendment just in case this bill goes anywhere. Line 1.5, delete wholesaler, insert retailer. Line 1.5, after lawn fertilizer, insert in the 7-county metro area. Line 1.6, delete provide to each retail establishment offering its product for sale. And in that place, put the word post. So basically, it read, a retailer of lawn fertilizer in the 7-county metro area containing phosphorus must post a conspicuous sign, and so on and so forth. And Madam Chair, I agree it should be retailer. I don't think we can control the wholesalers. We have small delivery trucks that come from Arkansas or come from, and they deliver multiple products to hardware stores and grocery stores and others. And, you know, they come from all over the country. I'm not sure how the Department of Agriculture, number one, is going to control those out-state sales coming in, but also, you know, for people in the metro area that might be coming to our co-ops and buying a pallet of, you know, of O20O or O46O or something for garden fertilizer, sometimes these are brown bags. They're not really, you know, they don't, the labeling's hard enough to enforce, but now to have somehow we're going to track and figure out if they're sending signs in with these pallets, and they don't necessarily know what they're being used for either. Now, fertilizer manufacturers, the ag fertilizer in particular, I can order a pallet of fertilizer from them. I don't have to tell them what I'm using it for. I can go into my co-op and I can get 40, 50-pound bags, a ton of fertilizer. I don't have to tell them what I'm using it for, so how would they even know to send a sign if I then go back and sell it to my neighbors for lawn use or something? I think it's very problematic. So if you want to do this in with your own folks, with the big green lawns here, that's fine. We'll let you sort that out down here, but I think then your retailers should be the ones responsible for doing it, not wholesalers from around the state or around the country. trying to track where this product is going and what it's being used for. So, Madam Chair, members, I would offer that amendment.
Mr. Sullivan, can you clarify that?
Yes, Madam Chair. A possible way to reword the amendment, as the amendment would read then, line 1.5 through 1.7 would read, in the 7-county metropolitan area, a retailer of lawn fertilizer containing phosphorus must post a conspicuous sign stating the legal limitations on the fertilizer's use.
That's fine.
I believe there's somebody in the audience that would like to testify. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. We are supportive of the bill asking for signage regarding phosphorus lawn fertilizer. I can give you a couple of quick comments on that and also on the amendment that's being proposed right now and what our concerns are on that. I'll start with the amendment in front of the committee, Madam Chair. Whether the retailer or the wholesaler is the correct party to have do this would not be a major concern to us. The issue for my cities is that we do have a very large and now a very, very strict legal requirement for stormwater runoff from our cities. One of the primary places we have had phosphorus problems is because of over-fertilization of residential lawns being done by people who don't even need the fertilizer in many cases. This was first addressed a number of years ago with a metro area restriction on the use of phosphorus fertilizers for only the specific cases you see listed here. That was made statewide several years ago now. And so currently those restrictions are in place statewide. This does not change that. We feel that it would be appropriate for the same signage to be in place statewide since the same ban is in effect statewide on the use of phosphorus on residential lawns unless it's for new seed, new lawn, or places where a soil test has confirmed the need for the phosphorus to be used. As many of you are probably aware, we have now in virtually every city over 5,000 in the state a requirement for a federal permit for our stormwater runoff that will include, if there is found to be a phosphorus problem, an impaired water anywhere near that city, very strict requirements for phosphorus control. This is one of the ways our cities rely on for being able to meet that federal requirement. The only other option is to put in place very, very expensive controls where we actually are going to have to start treating stormwater runoff as if it were a wastewater product. So would very much hope you help us keep this tool in place and help us educate the public on what the appropriate time to be using phosphorus fertilizer is. This is not an attempt to do anything with agricultural practices. It's an attempt to make sure we're only using phosphorus fertilizer in places where it actually is needed for the use of the lawn. That, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to respond to any questions we can.
Are there any questions? Discussion to the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Duncan.
Just to the amendment and the witness, if this amendment doesn't go on, I don't support this. So if you like the bill, you might like the amendment.
Madam Chair.
To the amendment.
Representative Duncan, I didn't know. It's on line 1.18 through 1.22 if you wanted to make any modifications on the references to wholesalers there as well, just to make it consistent, or
well, Madam Chair, I guess you could strike a line I could add to the amendment to strike that section C. I'd incorporate that into my amendment.
How about B, Representative Junkie? How about item B as well?
Madam Chair,
and section D.
Representative Junkie, perhaps you'd like to modify D just to say the retailer may substitute signs with an alternative sign to just get rid of provided by a wholesaler.
I'd incorporate that too.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I was just asking staff, I don't think that this would prohibit, say, a local city from passing a local ordinance to achieve the same results. So it may be that if a local city is finding it's having phosphorus concerns, it could require local retailers to post a sign, I think.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative, actually there is a prohibition on local units of government adopting or enforcing an ordinance more stringent than the state on this.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Junkie.
To that point, I don't know if that's what the law reads. An ordinance based on fertilizer application, I don't think there's any. I don't think there's anything that says a city can't do an ordinance on signage or anything else within their city. I've never heard of such a thing. I think the ordinance is based on phosphorus fertilizer, is what the section of law you're referring to. Cities can do any signage they want, as far as I know. I'm not on a local government committee, but...
Madam Chair and Representative Zinke, you're correct on the signage. The 18C.110 mm-hmm. is about ordinances related to phosphorus lawn fertilizer, not the actual the signage.
Not,
handling sale, handling use, or disposal of phosphorus lawn fertilizer.
Madam Chair and Representative, you're probably correct. My cities get paranoid about when what the language actually says is local units of government may not adopt or enforce ordinances regulating the sale, handling, or use or disposal of. So, if you consider this to be a sign to be regulating the sale or use of, we couldn't. But I think signage might well be an exception to that. So, it could be.
Mr. Sullivan, would you like to clarify it again?
Yes, Madam Chair, would you like me to read the entire amendment or just yes. the amendment? Okay. Junkie moves to amend the 83789 DE1 amendment as follows. Page 1, delete lines 5 through 6 and insert, in the 7-county metropolitan area, a retailer of lawn fertilizer containing phosphorus must post a conspicuous sign stating the legal limitations on the fertilizer's use. Page 1, line 7, delete everything before conspicuous. Page 1, delete lines 18 through 20. And page 1, line 21, delete signs provided by a wholesaler and insert the sign in paragraph A.
And, Madam Chair, eventually you'll have to redo the title, too, but that can be handled as it moves to the advisor's office.
So, to clarify this, the phosphorus bill is still in place, the law, and we're just not putting out signs in the rural areas? Okay.
Yes, Madam Chair.
And if a city or a township wants to put the signs up, they can?
Madam Chair, there's nothing prohibiting them from putting up the signs.
Discussions to Representative Junkie's oral amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passed. Further discussion of the bill? Representative Ziskowski.
Madam Chair, I move to amend the bill by inserting, I would guess, Council under 1.22 or somewhere, in 18C.60 subdivision 2A, strike the word statewide and insert in the 7-county metro area. I don't know if we need to change the description of the bill accordingly as well, I would guess.
Could you restate your amendment?
If you look at 18C.60, the phosphorus law, subdivision 2 reads, phosphorus use restrictions. A person may not apply a fertilizer containing plant nutrient phosphorus for turf statewide except under conditions, and it goes on. I'd like to strike statewide insert in the 7-county metro area.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I don't think that's in the bill before us. That's true. It's got to be part of the bill that's before us. You can't just grab statutes out and much.
Madam Chair, I would agree with Representative Junkie. I think you know, the battle of limiting where the existing law is a battle for another bill and another day.
Madam Chair.
Representative Junkie.
Just to Representative Druskowski and others, you can amend a bill any way you want in committee, but what you're doing, you probably should have written up that you'd be adding an entire section to the bill. It'd be an additive section to it. It's not pertaining to the bill in front of us. So what you really need to do is have a written amendment that adds a section and then does what you want in that section of law, because we'd have to have that whole section laid out here to see what we're doing. And not that you can't do it in committee. You certainly probably don't know if you could do it. I don't know about germaneness on the floor, but certainly it's germane here. But you kind of need to have that written out, because it could be a multi-page amendment. We're looking through the statutes and we're deleting a section of statute.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw my motion. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I remove my motion that House File 3789 pass with as amendment recommended to be referred to the Committee on Public Safety.
General
Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Bill passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, this is our last meeting. So, unless we have some informational meetings, which is possible, and some tours, so.
And Madam Chair, just to that point, I know you don't know yet, but it's possible that there could be some Senate bills you need to hear next week, because there's the first deadline is this Friday, but anything that's heard in either body that hasn't been heard can be heard the next week. So it's possible. I don't know what the Senate Ag Committee is doing, but if it's a policy bill that they hear we haven't heard here, you still may have to have a hearing if you choose.
Madam Chair, just two quick announcements, if I could.
Yes.
Okay. Just for the committee's benefit, if we look at this phosphorus report, two things I see just in the highlights of the findings. First of all, there have been no reports of the law being enforced by local government. Secondly, changes in water quality resulting from the law have not been documented. The other thing just to note is that the bill we passed earlier about the medical treatment, I still haven't seen a summary of the research report that we were told we were going to see today. I wondered if it exists.
On that note, have a good day.
Thanks for training.